The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Sports Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericasports.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
No, he didn't slam you, he didn't bump you, he didn't nudge you, he rubbed you. And rubbing son is racing.
Gentlemen, start your engines.
This is Pit Pass USA, the fastest auto racing location on the internet, with the latest news, the best interviews, and our own brand of commentary. Here's your host, Larry Henry.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to our first Best of Pit Pass USA as we wrap up the 2012 campaign. I'm Larry Henry. I hope you had a great and safe Thanksgiving. I am stuffed. Thank goodness for expandable pants to get through all of the food and all of the pies and the cakes and the cookies and the candy. And oh my goodness, it is just something else. Anyway, we are looking back at this past year. And also, we're going to go a little farther back, and then I'll talk about that in just a moment. But we're going to go back to the beginning of the year, and we'll talk to AJ Allmendinger. We discussed with him starting the 22 ride with Penske Racing. Of course, that went away. Coming on the July 4th weekend down in Daytona when he ran afoul of the substance abuse policies of NASCAR. So we will talk with him. Also, AJ involved in the winning car at the Rolex 24 this year. We'll talk to the car owner. We'll relive that moment with Michael Schenck. And the gentleman who once again won the ARCA race at Daytona, and that was Bobby Gerhart. An exciting finish, about 500 feet from the finish line. He was fifth, and somehow he came across first. We will talk to him. But first, to kick things off, we're going to go way back to 2004. Why? Well, that's when I had a chance to talk to the now brand new NASCAR Sprint Cup champion, Brad Keselowski. You see, back in April of 2004, he was just about to step into the family truck of the NASCAR then Craftsman Truck Series and run at Martinsville. He was 20 years of age, and I thought it would be interesting to see what Brad Keselowski sounded like back then and how he sounds and he acts today. Next up on Pit Pass USA, we turn our attention to the NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series. And when the series began way back in the mid-90s, well, there was a Keselowski behind the wheel. Well, lately, the Keselowskis have been spotting, and they've been running their NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series team. And, well, Bob Keselowski, of course, has been a crew chief. Well, now we're going to get a Keselowski back behind the wheel. It's the young guy of the family, Brad Keselowski, who grew up on the racetracks here in the state of Michigan. Welcome on board, Brad, and congratulations.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thanks, Larry.
This has got to be, like Christmas coming in the middle of April by getting a chance to run the truck at Martinsville.
Oh, yeah, I understand you completely there. I've been definitely building up a little anxiety, and we've been doing testing, and, you know, you just keep preparing yourself and waiting, and I feel like we're finally at the moment of truth here.
You know, you're one of those guys that grew up cutting your teeth on late models around here. You ran up at Auto City and ran some other tracks, and I know I saw you at the Glass City 200 last year down at Toledo.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, I ran Toledo quite successfully, I think, anyway. I ran about four races there and won two of them, and I think I would have done a little better. I had a couple of bad breaks I caught, but I ran a lot of local places, Flint and Auto City, and up in Ovid, Michigan, which is Owosso. And I felt like we had done reasonably well to where we were ready to make the next step, and the Truck Series is that next step.
Well, here you are, what, 20 years of age?
Yeah.
Of course, everybody, you're almost old since they're all 18 and 19.
Yeah, it's almost getting to that way. I kind of feel like if you're going to make it in this sport in this day of age, you need to be getting into NASCAR at about 21 to 20 years old and starting to have some success. And this is my chance, and I'm going to try to capitalize on it.
How do you feel about this whole thing jumping in? I know the first two races, which were Daytona and Atlanta, which are just super quick tracks that Frank Kimmel, the reigning ARCA champion, ran the truck, which was probably, thinking about it, a good thing with the lack of experience you've had on super speedways.
Yeah, actually, you know, I look at that as a situation where we both benefited. We've been really good friends with Frank and his entire family and crew, and there were things that he brought to the table that, you know, perhaps helped me. Like, I can listen to him and I can pick up things that he does, and to have the opportunity to work with an ARCA champion who has the experience that he does is only going to help myself to prepare for this chance I've got at Martinsville.
Well, Brad, what things have you had to learn as you've tested in a NASCAR Craftsman truck? It's so much different from your late model car.
Well, the biggest thing is, I tell the guys this all the time, is the driving styles are so much different. You're switching from a 2,700-pound vehicle that has got the downforce more than what a Cup car has, a Winston Cup star, or a Nextel Cup car has. And, I mean, they're aero cars, the cars that I race, where the trucks are more mechanical grip, and they're more fun to drive, I'll be honest. You slide them around, and you drive them hard, and you race hard, and they're not as fragile, and they're not as high-tech. It's kind of back to the basics racing from late-model racing. But I'll tell you what, they're a blast, and it's nice to be able to get into something that you can bang doors and fenders with, and it'll stay in one piece.
Of course, another adjustment you're going to have to make is to the tires, and that's all we keep hearing this year is tires, and really everyone in the NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series really hadn't had much time to do much with that, with only two races and spread out. You know, they raced at Daytona, took 5 weeks, raced at Atlanta, take 5 weeks off. It's kind of hard to get everything figured out.
Yeah, it is. Actually, we're fortunate to be a member of the Ford Factory Racing Team, and Ford's been doing a lot of testing. In fact, they did a test for all the teams where they spent the last week or so doing short track testing for this new tire that no one in NASCAR has used yet on the short tracks. We're going to go to a completely different tire for the short tracks. And like I said, nobody's got a chance to use it, and we've been testing away on that, and we're planning on testing as well sometime during the next week.
We're talking with Brad Keselowski here on Pit Pass USA. He's going to be driving in the NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series race at Martinsville in the 29 Ford F-150 truck for K Automotive, which, of course, his mother's listed as the owner. She'll be his spotter. His dad, Bob, of course, is going to be the crew chief. What's it like having the entire family around? I guess you're so used to it that it's no big deal.
Yeah, I mean, you're so used to it. I mean, they become, at the racetrack, my dad just turns into Bob. And, you know, you just kind of get used to that, and you develop a working relationship. And sometimes it's kind of hard to switch back and forth. You know, to when you go home, it's hard to say, you know, Dad, I want to do this or that. But I've gotten used to it, and I think that in racing, we're fortunate to be a family race team from the aspect that you're gone so much. And to be able to be with your family while you're gone is kind of makes it a little better deal and kind of takes some of the stress off you.
Do you feel any pressure, though? I mean, you're following in a legend's footstep with your dad.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of pressure there. I'll tell you what, it sure would be nice sometime during the year to get a win, and we'd be the first father-son duo to win a race in the Truck Series. I don't know if that's going to happen, but we're sure going to try. But there's a lot of pressure, probably more that I put on myself than anything else.
And your first NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series race, you're going to be going up against Darrell Waltrip, who's going to be running.
Yeah, Darrell's got a lot of experience at Martinsville, and he should be quite a challenge, I'll tell you.
Well, what do you think about that track now? I mean, that's another one of those where there's going to be some bruised egos. Well, there's always bruised egos in the NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series, I think, with all the bumping that goes on. But how do you approach that? Because here you are, it's your first time out. You got these guys that have raced for years, because there's a lot of guys that are Cup veterans that are now running full-time, you know, in the NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series. And here you got the young kid out there. Do you just say, okay, I just want to get out of the way, or do you forget it all and just, you know, go for it?
Well, you kind of have to forget it all. That's the only way you can do it. I kind of look at it where we're all equal when we get in the race car. I mean, nobody's a star anymore when you're behind the wheel, and you have to forget who your friends are and who your enemies are to race successfully. That's the only way I know how to do it, from the standpoint of you can't cut anyone breaks, or it's going to come back and haunt you later on in the race. But on the same standpoint, you can't treat anyone unfairly, or they're going to come back and haunt you later on in the race.
Now, the team was a top tenner last year. Do you think you can have it there by the end of the season?
Well, I'm hoping so. I know that we've done some testing back when we had the same personnel from the team last year, And I felt like we were right there as far as myself, as far as being prepared for the opportunity and for the speeds and time-wise. My biggest challenge I'm going to face, though, is going to be staying fast over long runs and obviously not making any rookie mistakes.
What's it like just waiting for that day? Because, as I said, it's been a long time. The announcement's been made, and he's still got to wait. I mean, you're just waiting and waiting and waiting. It's nice to test, but sure not like being out there with a bunch of other guys racing.
Yeah, exactly. I know what you mean there. The biggest thing, I try to put it to the back of my mind, and anytime I try to think about that, I'll go do something to keep myself busy. Try to keep the anxiety down, but it's definitely starting to build now that we're getting within 2 weeks. Tomorrow, I believe it is, that we'll be out there practicing. So we're trying real hard just to be calm and working on the truck to make it better and testing with it. And there's enough to do around here to keep you plenty busy.
As I always say, people should go out to their local racetracks around the state of Michigan. Who knows who you're going to see? A lot of possible stars of tomorrow. And obviously, once again, you've proved this, paying your dues right here on the local tracks.
Yeah, I'm really fortunate to be racing with some of the people in this area. There's some really good racers in this area that aren't as well known as they should be. And like you said, I mean, there are some great drivers that are worth watching on any weekly night here in this area.
Well, Brett, we're going to be watching you in the NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series race at Martinsville. That's one thing I make a point of. Never miss one. I always, if I'm not home, I always videotape it, because the NASCAR Craftsman Truck races are usually the best racing you're going to see.
Yeah, we like to pride ourselves on that. You know, Craftsman's got the slogan, tough trucks and tougher drivers, and they are. You've got your guys from Cup that are a little bit tougher and a little bit ornerier, and then you've got your younger guys who probably just don't know better, like myself, and it provides for some great racing.
Well, Brad, good luck at Martinsville. Good luck all season long. You know, the Keselowski family, we all know them around here in the state of Michigan, and you're basically our hometown favorite race team, so we love to see you do well.
All right, I appreciate it. Thanks.
In case if you were wondering what the finish was for Brad Keselowski in his Truck Series debut back in 2004 at Martinsville, he came home 33rd, also notable in that race. A couple of guys you see every Sunday for the most part in Sprint Cup, David Ruderman and Carl Edwards were also in the field. Both of those finished in the top 10, but that was Brad Keselowski back just before his debut in the NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series at that time, and of course now the brand new Sprint Cup champion. Well, next up we'll turn to the gentleman that was his teammate until the July 4th weekend. We caught up with A.J. Allmendinger just before the season began. We will talk to him. We'll be returned to Pit Pass USA, part of the Power Motorsports Series on VoiceAmericaSports.com.
Your internet flagship station for sports, Voice America Sports.
We some hard hitters, we some hard hitters.
Hard-hitting radio is a new kind of sports and entertainment show. Your hosts are NFL veterans Mark McMillan and co-host Byron Evans. It's an hour of hater-free radio every week. You'll hear interviews with top athletes, celebrities, coaches, and fans. It's humor, hits, and conversation. Hard-hitting radio is on with McMillan and Evans. Listen Fridays at 3 p.m. Pacific Time, 6 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Sports Network.
Listen to the women's side of the fitness industry on Fitness RX Radio. If you're looking to stay healthy and look great, or are getting ready to compete athletically, this is the show for you. We'll look at competitions from the inside out, bring you fitness tips, nutrition to keep you on top of your game, and so much more. We want to hear from you, too, and we'll take your questions by phone or email. Tune in to Fitness RX Radio, airing every Monday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time, on the Voice America Variety Channel. Look and feel your best.
The fans now have a voice to speak their mind. No holds barred.
They need to bitch his ass and then move on.
I just think that the coach made a mistake.
All crazy.
NFL, MLB, NBA, NHL. Speak up.
Speak up.
Or forever hold your mouth.
We ain't playing around here.
Voice America Sports.
You're listening to Pit Pass USA with Larry Henry. To leave comments or suggest future guests for the show, email us at LarryHenry@PitPassUSA.com. That's LarryHenry@PitPassUSA.com. Now back to more of the fastest show in motorsports, Pit Pass USA with Larry Henry.
Well, it's been a little over a week now since the NHRA Full Throttle Drag Racing Series season came to an end. A chance for this man to sit back, reflect, and think about what he accomplished out in Pomona, California, winning his first NHRA Top Fuel title. That is Antron Brown. Antron, congratulations. Has it finally sunk in now?
You know, it's starting to come together. And I'm just been sitting here like, I said, we just won the world championship. You know, we've been out there for so long, like for over 15 years, just trying to make this moment happen. And once it happened, it felt like we just released a whole bunch of steam and pressure out of our system. It was ridiculous. It was like, we finally did it. We actually did it. And I mean, for Brian and Mark, our two crew chiefs, and Brian, he's been in the sport longer than I have as a crew member. And he's one of the youngest crew chiefs out there. And me and him both have never got it done. And we finally got it done, man. And it just feels incredible. It was all that we always dreamed about and then some.
As they say, nothing ever comes easy in racing. And for you, this didn't come easy either, because you had to sit and wait and watch your teammate Tony Schumacher. And if he wins the final, he is taking home the championship again. And there wasn't a darn thing you could do.
No, it was just out of our grasp, and fortunately, we just did so well in the countdown. Not the first race in the countdown, but three races back to back, we did very well. Where we won two in a row, then we runnered up, and then we went to and then we literally went to the final and set a world record. So that pretty much gave us a big points lead over everybody, where we had over 100 points, and that 100 points. Let me tell you something, it came in full hand, because in Vegas, I mean, we just couldn't buy around. We had like all these electrical gremlins. I guess when you run so many laps in a car, things just start falling apart. And we replaced everything. We put all brand new stuff on, and the new stuff is the things that hurt us. And that was what caused us their deal in Vegas. And in Pomona, we had a brand new fuel line that broke on us in the first round. Like, I mean, we wish it would have happened to us in qualifying, so it wouldn't happen to us on race day. But that's just how this NHRA racing is, brother. It's like, there's only one way to win, and there's only a million ways to lose. And it was just the way it ended up for us. And all those other races just gave us enough of a lead just to hold on by 7 points to bring that championship home.
What I kind of liked about this year is three of the four champions, you included, were first-time champions in the sport, and all three of you have given your heart and soul and more years than you can count on both hands to getting to this point. And I think it just kind of said something about the perseverance and hanging in there and getting through everything. You know, there are up days, there are bad days, there are days you say, why am I even doing this? But all three of you hung in there and got to this moment.
Absolutely. I mean, thing about it is that our sport is so humbling. It's a humbling sport. Is that you can be a hero one weekend, and the next weekend you're a zero and don't even qualify. And with that being said, is that when it's like it gives you that deal where, like, you know, AJ, Alan Johnson, Pro Stock Car, him and his dad, they've got a dynasty starting to build up now, because they've been in for so long, working so hard, and it's paid off. Jack, I mean, he's living out his dream. I mean, he went from being an instructor at Frank Holly's Drag Racing School to driving a funny car, and a lot of people were against him along the way. He goes, they used to give him different comments and different stuff like that, and Jack just used that as his fuel to drive him, and he's been through all kind of ups and downs from his team being switched and changed and everything else. And that was just our team owner, Don, just trying to bring a real team to the table. And what I mean by real team is he was trying to orchestrate and get good guys to come in and work together on both cars to actually build a relationship like that, where all of our funny cars work together. And he's done that. And you could tell by the way Jack bounced back and Ron's car came up. And they won so many races, broke world records, and competed for a championship against each other. And that's something to be said because they race against John Force Racing, who's won multiple world championships, and those guys know how to win championships over there, and they race hard. And for our teams to do that, and with Johnny Gray and Rob Winland, who did a fantastic job, then Matt Hagan came on at the end with Tommy D. They came on strong since Sonoma. They missed the countdown, but they won more races than anybody from Sonoma to the end of the year. So that tells you how strong our funny car teams are. And the same thing with our dragster teams with Mike Green and Neil in the Army car and Phil and Todd on the Fram car with Spencer driving. I mean, our teams, we push each other, we help each other, and we push each other to new heights. And I think that's why you saw so much success in the DSR stable this year.
Since you grew up around drag racing, was there ever a moment in your life you thought about doing anything else?
You know, when I grew up as a kid, my first dream, to be honest with you, was like, I thought I was going to be the supercross nut. You know, I grew up racing dirt bikes and motocross. And it wasn't until that when I was 10 years old, like my dad was drag racing before I was born. I used to go to drag races with him and everything else. But my deal was I was on motorcycles. And when I was 10 years old, that's when I remember distinctly I got the bug. It was 1986. I was at the Summer Nationals. And I was there when I saw Big Daddy Darn Garlits flip over. He flipped over, got out of his car, and stood up, and everybody gave him a standing ovation. And he went back and put that car back together, and he ended up winning the world championship that year. And that's what stuck out to my mind. I'm like, look at this guy. First, I thought he was crazy for doing what he's done, but then the drive and determination he had, and he became my hero. He became my hero. And ever since that day, that's when this NHRA racing bug bit me. And I just been a huge fan of the sport. All the way up till now, because I still watch every class from super stock, to super comp, top dragster, super gas, comp eliminator, top sportsman, all the pro categories, pro mod, the alcohol ranks. I watch every class, and I'm just a huge fan of the sport. Until this day, and I mean, I think that's where my passion comes from, and it makes me do what I want to do. That's why I can never quit, never give up, and that's why we have strived so hard as a team to try to make this championship happen, and we finally got it done.
And what's interesting, and maybe a lot of people forget, it was just 2008 when you left the pro bike side to start doing the dragster side of things.
Absolutely. I mean, that was a big transition for me, and it was just so many people, Larry, that came in my life that got me here. You know, from the bike deal was Troy Vincent, and I got to spend time with Dave Schultz, who really helped me tweak my and hone my skills on how to be a true competitor. And Troy told me how to be a professional. And then I came over, and then Matco gave me the shot with David Powers and Lee Beard. And Lee Beard's the one that really orchestrated all of it and got me into Top Fuel, and I couldn't thank him enough. And then comes along is Brian Carotti and Mark Oswald that came to our team. And that all happened because of Mike Ashley. And Mike Ashley, I mean, is just a credible individual, really taught us how to pull together and believe. He gave us that deal of just believing, just that attitude, that optimism to believe and get the job done. And then we almost got the championship when he was there, and that's when we did the Western Swing in 2009. And then we switched over to Don Schumacher, bought our team out, and then Don, he just gave us the final key to the puzzle. He gave us the extra race pieces, and he just gave us just the know-how to get it done and the infrastructure to get it done the rest of the way. And it's all contributed to DSR and our team, from Brian and Mark and our whole Macu Tools boys that got it done. And that's the whole story to get us to where we're at. And definitely I've been very blessed from my Heavenly Father and just to be blessed with the people he surrounded me by throughout my whole career to get me to where I'm at.
With the championship, is there a different feel? Do you think there's going to be a different feel to you going to the track that now your name is up there with all these people you grew up watching that have won championships in NHRA in the pro ranks, that you go, man, I do belong. I felt like I belonged all along, but this just gives you that one little extra piece of the puzzle?
You know, it makes you just feel incredible inside, and I'm humbled to be mentioned amongst those guys' names, because there's people in this sport that's done incredible things. And what makes it so unique and so incredible is that when I found out that, like, you know, our team, we became world champs, right? there's only been eight. I mean, we're the 18th world champ team. You know what I mean? Out of 61 years of the sport being ran, out of 61 years, there only been 18 top fuel world champs, and we're the 18th one. So it's just remarkable just to be mentioned amongst them other 17, like Big Daddy Darn Garlic, Kenny Bernstein, Perdomo, you know what I mean? All those guys, and Tony Schumacher, who's won it seven times, Larry Dixon, Dale Worsham, I mean, Joe Amato, who's a five-time champ. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. It's just incredible just to be, and Eddie Hill, to be mentioned amongst people of that, you know, of that stature. And I'm very honored and very blessed.
Well, it couldn't happen to a nicer gentleman than you, Antron, and all that you've done over the years and the hard work you've put in and the award-winning personality you have, which is great to see around the racetrack and to talk with you from time to time about what's going on out there. And I think it was one of the very popular wins that NHRA has had, and I know you're going to enjoy it. It's a short, very short off season, but enjoy it, and then we'll be back at Pomona not that far away to start it all over again and be looking for a new championship.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, now we ended the Full Throttle Championship Series, and now we're going to the Mellow Yellow. So it's time to go on yellow this year for NHRA Racing, and we're going to go out there, give everything we got, and try to be one of the first Mellow Yellow champs.
Antron, congratulations again on the championship, and hope you and your family have a great Turkey Day.
You too, brother, and thanks for having me on.
Antron Brown, the top fuel champion in the NHRA Full Throttle Drag Racing Series. He's the last champion for, quote-unquote, that series, because, as he mentioned, next year, Mellow Yellow is the title sponsor. We'll see if he can do it again, get two of them back-to-back, and have to fight his own Don Schumacher racing teammates like he did this year to get the 2013 title. But no finer man, great guy to talk to, Antron Brown. Well, another great guy that's fun to talk to, and boy, I tell you what, it was an interesting interview. We'll talk to the funny car champion. That is Jack Beckman. When we return to Pit Pass USA, part of the Power Motorsports Series on VoiceAmericaSports.com.
The opening kickoff is a beauty.
It's a fly ball deep right field. Back goes O'Neill. He's at
tough
the
shot.
Got it with 2.8 seconds left
to left. I don't care where they put him.
From high school to the pros, we
cover everything.
Let your voice be heard. Voice America Sports.
Listen to Sports Talk at the Positive Pub every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Sports Channel. Gil Tyree talks to sports newsmakers, playmakers, and story breakers. You, the hardcore, interactive, and novice fan, can join the show via your phone calls and emails. Sample what's good, right, and positive about the world of sports every week. Begin your week in a positive way with Sports Talk from the Positive Pub. Be here every Monday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Sports Channel.
You're listening to Pit Pass USA with Larry Henry. To leave comments or suggest future guests for the show, email us at LarryHenry@PitPassUSA.com. That's LarryHenry@PitPassUSA.com. Now back to more of the fastest show in motorsports, Pit Pass USA with Larry Henry.
The best of Pit Pass USA continues as we go back to the month of January, Daytona, the Rolex 24, when we had a chance to catch up to the winning team owner, Michael Schenck. Well, every sports car driver in the world wants to win, of course, the Rolex 24. So does every team, and so does every owner. Well, this gentleman not only won the 50th Rolex 24, but his team finished first and third, and that is Michael Schenck of Michael Schenck Racing. And Michael, congratulations on an unbelievable weekend for you.
I appreciate that, and that's good to talk to you. We're still a little bit up on cloud nine right now, and the response from this has just been overwhelming for all of us. I'm just so grateful and so thankful right now.
You sound still a little tired. It has to take it out of you after 24 hours of racing.
The tired part comes from the parties I've been to the last two nights. So we spent a lot of time on the track, obviously Saturday and Sunday, and then we had a big team party afterwards, and then we had a party in Columbus, Ohio, where I'm from and our team is based, and we had one last night. We had about 300 people that saw us come home, and it's just overwhelming, the good thoughts and the kind words we've had from thousands of people.
When you take a look at the weekend, going in, everyone was talking, of course, about the Corvettes. We saw what they did in the roar before the 24 with their practice. You always talk about Ganassi because, let's be honest, the last 5 years, they either won it or they finished second. And then there was the talk about the Fords and the Riley operations. But when all was said and done, Ford was first, second, and third with your teams first and third. Did you really believe you could get the job done going in?
You know what? We actually did. And we spent a lot of time analyzing segment times from the three-day test back in early January and looking what we're at and what we were trying to accomplish during that test. We knew we had a little bit more. We were working on the mechanical aspects of the car a lot during the test and not the outright speed. So we knew we had a little bit more in qualifying. It was just okay for us on both cars. We qualified, I believe, 6th and 8th. But we felt like we had, the night practice on Thursday night, we were quickest in that session. And we felt like, okay, we really got something here. And we put fresh Roush Yates Ford Racing motors in it for the race. And boy, they came alive and they were really, really quick.
Well, we saw the really quick part of it because, especially on the straightaways and where most of the racetrack is out on the high banks at Daytona, you could really see the speed difference. And when they put the foot down, those cars responded.
There's several aspects to that, though. It's just, as good a job as Roush Yates do with the motors and Ford, there's also the new bodywork. We have the Riley, the top cars were using the Riley Gen 3 bodies, which is the latest body. So that would be us, Ganassi, and Star Wars. So all three of us had that body, and we believe that body is very, very good. And that helps us, too, being pretty slippery. We spent a lot of time, as much as we could, having just got it at the beginning of January, making sure that car had as little drag as possible. And we ran virtually no downforce on the car, which made it tricky to drive, but made it so fast in a straight line. And that was just the strategy we took it. And we noticed that the Ganassi car was running more downforce than my car or the Star Wars car, too, by the way. So we'll get into the subtleties of why cars ran the speed they did and how they do it this week or next week. But there's a lot more science to it than just looking like we rock it off from everybody, for sure.
Michael, you talked about this a lot, and so did A.J. Allmendinger, one of your drivers on the winning team. But the last 7 years, can you tell people what that means and what has been going on the last 7 years to get you to this point of winning the 50th running of the Rolex 24?
It's like building a book. Every year we come down there, and for the last 5 years, we lead the race every single time. And we just don't get it done for various reasons. We've had jam nuts come undone. We've had flat tires destroy the bodywork when they come undone. We've had all these, of course, we've had crashes that kill the effort. And we take all that stuff, like don't do this list, right? And we compiled it into someday it's a good read for a book, but we compiled it into about a 7-page document that we hand out in a team meeting before the race. And this is what we live and die by. Okay, we tell the drivers, if you do this, you will win this race or do very well. And you know what? They did it. And in my 6th car, the car that finished 3rd, the oldest guy on that team was 27 years old. That's Michael McDowell. But the others are 19 years old. These kids never even thought about sprint, endurance racing before. So we beat them guys over the head. And you know what? They finished up a lead lap in P3 because they listened to us. And I think the strategy is that you have to take away your mistakes and not ignore them and mark them down and don't do them again,
When you look at the team that won, A.J. Allmendinger, we've documented, of course, what the Dinger has gone through and got the great ride, of course, coming up with Roger Penske in NASCAR. Oz Negri ran great stints. Justin Wilson coming back from his injuries he suffered in the Izod IndyCar series. But John Pugh, he may be the forgotten one. Talk about John Pugh's effort in all of this that sometimes gets overlooked.
Oh, no, it does a lot, and I feel for him because this is a guy that got into racing really late in life, and it's so difficult because all of us that have been in it since we were under 10 years old, every single one of us on that team, drivers and myself. So John came in at way late. But the smartest thing he ever did was hook up with Oz Negri. Oz is by far the best driver coach in the world that I've ever seen. So Oz has taken and worked with him for 6 years now, a very intense coaching. And John is just now starting to bear fruit. His last stint, and I don't know when it was, I think it was 3 or 4 in the morning, his pace was exactly where the leaders was. And I can't ask for any more than that. I mean, he's so competitive. He's so incredibly fit physically. Nothing phases him in that regard. And he wants to win against the best. He's in the series because he doesn't want to hide from the competition. He's in the series because he wants to beat the best on any given day.
Michael, I've got to ask you, you brought up a couple of things in the post-race press conference. Something about a new hairdo or cutting something into the side of the hair and a shot of vodka in the morning. What was that about?
Oh, we're throwing random things out there. But there's a few things that, you know, we try to figure out, okay, why did we win this race? And there was a few oddities that you know, AJ had said to me at the three-day test in one of our media thing that we do together. He said, Shank, if we win this thing, you're going to cut my logo. He's got a logo. If you go to AJAllmendinger.com and see it, it's got AJ with some flames coming off. You're going to cut my logo into the side of your head. That's a deal, and we shook on camera. So once the media got a hold of that, man, so tonight in Columbus, outside Columbus, Ohio, we have a good friend of ours that's going to fully document and use a stencil and cut his logo into the back of my head. the second story was on Saturday, right before the race, about 2 o'clock. I'd gone out to the motor coach, and mine's right next to AJ's, and I popped in there to see how his crew was doing and himself, and they were all joking around, and they said, Shank, you got to do a shot of vodka. So his bus driver whipped me up a cold shot of vodka, which I never do, of course, when I'm working, but I went ahead and did it, and lo and behold, we won the race. I don't know. Maybe it'll be a tradition from now on.
Well, if it'll give you another win at the Rolex 24, why not? But on top of everything, the 50th Rolex 24, the special race, every driver always wants to win in Daytona, but for the 50th, they wanted to win it more. What does this, all of this mean to you?
I think it's going to change our life. I mean, I don't mean to sound so dramatic, but I've never been so inundated with well wishes and people that want to do different things with us than today, yesterday, and today. My email I just gave up on for a while. I got to go to watch a movie with my wife here or something. But it feels very confidence inspiring. I feel like we can accomplish about anything. It just reaffirms that all this work and sacrifice we've had to make, you know, financially and with our families and stuff, is worth it. And also just extremely happy for the drivers that have stuck with me. There's four that are in the car, have been with me a long time, and that they stuck with me because they could have gone anywhere. You know, so it's all positive momentum going forward for 2012.
Well, congratulations again on winning the 50th annual Rolex 24, first and third, and now it's going after the Grand Am Daytona Prototype title.
Thank you.
Michael Shank, long time coming and getting the overall win at the Rolex 24 back in January. And believe it or not, it's just 8 weeks until we do it all over again at Daytona. And the last time before we do the combined series with the America Le Mans Series teams coming over in 2014. Well, next up on the Best of Pit Pass USA, we'll go back to February. The Bud Shootout weekend when things got kicked off with the ARCA Racing Series. We'll talk with the gentleman who wound up coming out of nowhere to win once again, Bobby Gearhart, when we return to the Best of Pit Pass USA, part of the Power of Motorsports series at VoiceAmericaSports.com.
Your internet flagship station for sports.
Voice America Sports.
Tune in every Monday after the busy sports weekend to Catch the Vision Sports Radio with host Thomas Lewis. We'll look at sports from every level, from what happened years ago to what happened last week to what's coming next. Thomas Lewis will take you to places you've never been before on a sports talk show and will bring an experience you've been waiting for.
Our topics will focus on realities facing a player, labor disputes, academics, recruiting, and transition. Tune in to Catch the Vision Sports Radio, Mondays at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern, on the Voice America Sports Channel.
Are you ready for an old-school, in-your-face discussion of professional, college, and high school football? Tune in for talk on a variety of football-related topics on the program From Under the Helmet with your host, Derek Kennard. You'll hear the week's headlines and straight talk from the host and weekly guests that are personal and provocative. From Under the Helmet is broadcast live every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Sports Channel.
The fans now have a voice to speak their mind. No holds barred.
They need a bitch's ass and then move on.
I just think that the coach made a mistake.
All crazy.
NFL, MLB, NBA, NHL. Speak up.
Speak up.
Or forever hold your mouth.
We ain't playing around here.
Voice America Sports.
You're listening to Pit Pass USA with Larry Henry. To leave comments or suggest future guests for the show, email us at LarryHenry@PitPassUSA.com. That's LarryHenry@PitPassUSA.com. Now, back to more of the fastest show in motorsports, Pit Pass USA with Larry Henry.
Welcome back to the Best of Pit Pass USA. I'm Larry Henry, and we relive the moments back at the very beginning of the year in February when the ARCA Racing Series presented by Menards had their season opener. And when the day was done, it was a very familiar face in Gatorade Victory Lane. Well, hopefully you watched the ARCA Racing Series race at Daytona on Saturday to kick off this 2012 season, because it was unbelievable. The gentleman I'm about to talk to was fifth at Pitt Inn. By the start-finish line on the final lap, he was the winner for the eighth time in his career in 25 tries, and that is Bobby Gerhardt. And Bobby, that may have been the most spectacular win of the eight you've had.
I would have to agree. I think I got out of the car in victory lane and said, "Did that just happen?" naturally a very unfortunate ending for some, but... just kind of the way this goes, is your stricter plate races go right to the end. They're all fuel mileage races. And, I was just reminded the last couple laps that there's going to be a couple guys in trouble. And that's the way it went.
Well, we saw you at the very beginning of the race. We saw you come on in lap one. Now, a year ago, you came in on lap five and went the distance, but lap one was a little early. Well, is there a problem? And you came back in on lap 10, and then you were able to stretch it out because, of course, we went three laps over doing a green-white checkered. Was all of that planned?
Yes, it was. The strategy to come in on lap one was basically taking a gamble that there'll be a caution before we get a lap down, which didn't happen. However, we really felt we didn't have anything to lose. Starting in the back, it could have ended up looking like a tremendously heroic move. It didn't work that way, but we really felt that we lost nothing through it. Because we ended up in the same place that we were before, which was in the back. So then we kind of reanalyzed very quickly our position. Took advantage of the caution at 12, knew we had the fuel to go to the end. Of course, who could know that you're going to run maybe 55 green laps from there on in, which, put the coffin and some of the other cars, effort, but put the nail in the coffin, so to speak. But, from that point, we could have ran green to the end, which it almost did. And, as it turned out, it was the winning move.
When you came to that final turn, coming off of turn four, as I said, you were in fifth place, I believe, right at pit end.
Yep.
The stripe, obviously, you were in first. Did you see the car slowing in front of you, and then your only chance was to go to the outside and just zoom by?
Well, actually, the lap before, the kid who ended up finishing second through Charleston gave me a pretty good shot at the right part of the racetrack, and I really did get a tremendous run. However, at the spot that I moved out at, I actually was on a pretty good run and may have gotten past the car or a car and a half, but that was it. However, at the same time I made the move, the leader bobbled and just backed everybody up. And it looked like, to be honest with you, it looked like the five car was the only car that was ready to take a gamble on the last lap. And look at what happened.
Yeah, it was incredible. As I told you before we started this interview, of course, I do the PA here at Daytona, and I was calling the race. And I saw it. I was watching it. I called you as the winner immediately. And then I went, did I really see that? And I had to turn real quickly over to the scoring monitor and had the five at number one. I went, okay, I was right, but I wasn't so sure because it happened so quickly that you just blasted past everybody, and there you were.
I had already made the commitment to go to the outside before they bobbled. And in a millisecond, when the leader immediately bobbled, I mean, it was just like they were sitting ducks for me. I never took my foot from the floor, so to speak. And that's why it went so quick. Probably one of the most spectacular events I've ever seen, to be honest with you.
Well,
you know, you see a lot of them things and they go the opposite way. However, it's just like the more I think of it, it's almost like it was destiny.
Well, that may have been. I kept track of you all day long, wherever you were on the racetrack, because I had seen what you have done before, hanging around the back, and you'd move up a little and move up a little and move up a little, and you finally got into the contention area. And then when we had the yellow flags there towards the end, and everybody, I'm watching Brandon McReynolds, he's down on the bottom of the racetrack and dropping way behind the pace car trying to save fuel, and started seeing cars pulling off to get fuel. I went, this is playing right into Bobby Gerhardt's hands.
Yeah, it sure did. Yeah.
What is it that allows you to get that kind of fuel mileage on the car? I know we talked about this a week ago, how much effort you put in to Daytona. I mean, it's Daytona. The rest of the season's fine, but it's Daytona. I mean, to get that kind of fuel mileage over everyone else.
It just seems as though the races always end up as a fuel mileage race. So we've just simply worked on it, and that has to do with airbox, carburation, engine package, headers, exhaust. We just have worked a long time to really make our entire package very efficient. And, you know, I don't want to put any salt on anybody's wound, but we had enough fuel in the car to go to Jacksonville when it was over.
Hey, are you using the Smokey Unic rules or something from the past?
You know, just only because this time I wasn't leading the whole race, I was behind. And it just, you take a lot more fuel when you lead because you're just, you know, you're at it all the time. You should really be able to save a little bit more behind, and it showed up even on our numbers. So, I mean, I had zero doubt that we were in any kind of trouble there. Zero doubt. And as it turned out, we had plenty left.
What's it been like for you the last few days? I'm sure your phone has rung off the hook. You barely got a voice right now a few days after the event. What's it been like for you and the team and everyone involved with your effort?
Well, I think everybody's still a little bit in shock. We had a tremendous roller coaster of a weekend. Naturally, winning the pole, which is always very special to me. Having it getting taken away, having the whole thing been disqualified, it made us look like something we're really not, Larry. It made us look like we had tried to reach into a gray area. It was simply just a little mechanical blip. That, you know, of course, I know what probably happened, but, you know, of course, we get looked at by the rest of the competitors by, oh, I see. Well, I think we put an exclamation point on that after putting our spare engine in and going right to the top of the leaderboard, being the fastest car in happy hour and running just as fast as we did with the other one. You know, so first of all, it's an extremely long day for all of us. We started about 4:30. We had to come in, change engines, get that one through tech, get ready for happy hour, you know. And while everybody's scrambling to just put the race face on, we're looking for some place to stand. But, you know, that happened very solidly in happy hour. And I just looked at everybody. We had a little bit of a meeting. I told everybody, look, we still have a shot to win this thing. We just have to have a little bit different strategy. But well, naturally, a big shock to everybody. And unbelievable. I'm still in shock.
Well, I tell you, it was a fantastic finish. It was unbelievable. The joy that I saw down in Gatorade Victory Lane was well deserved. And I don't know how you top winning your eighth in that fashion, but I'm assuming when we see you next February at Daytona, you'll try to figure out a way.
Oh, I'm sure of that. How can a guy stop right now? I mean, to be honest with you, I would have never thought I would have been racing past my mid-40s, let alone well into my mid-50s, and still winning. And that just shows when you surround yourself with great people and, you know, got an immediate core group that believe in their driver, you know, a lot of good things can happen.
Absolutely so. Bobby, congratulations on a great win. Enjoy it, and we will see you back and see if you can get number 9 in 26 races next February.
Well, thank you. My pleasure to be here. I apologize about my voice, but it started losing my voice about 10 yards from the finish line. I'll tell you, I was never so vocal and excited behind the wheel of a car when I saw what was unfolding in front of me. And, you know, in a couple seconds, the reality of what had just happened and what was about to happen, Larry, I screamed for the next 50 seconds. And fantastic turn of events. Always a pleasure and a privilege to be at Daytona. And I'm very proud, you know, after what happened, certainly.
Bobby Gerhard, after another incredible win at Daytona, the Anchor Racing Series presented by Menards. I don't know what it is about him in that Black 5 car, but he just owns that racetrack. When you think he doesn't have a chance, somehow you're looking, and he gets the checkered flag first, as he did back in February. Well, I would like to thank you for listening to this Best of Pit Pass USA today. We're going to have these until the sometime early in the beginning of the year, in mid-January. Hopefully you enjoyed also the look back at Brad Keselowski in 2004, 8 years ago, for the now current NASCAR Sprint Cup champion, when he was getting ready to make his debut in NASCAR in the then Craftsman Truck Series down at Martinsville. Kind of a different look to Brad Keselowski, and shows you what his thinking was then and how it's not that much different from his racing of today and the way he analyzes those things and what he needs to do. Well, I would like to thank you for listening. Don't forget, you can always email me, LarryHenry@PitPassUSA.com, LarryHenry@PitPassUSA.com. We are also on Twitter at PitPassUSA and on Facebook, PitPassUSA with Larry Henry. Again, I hope you had a great Thanksgiving. We will see you back next week for more of the Best of PitPassUSA, part of the Power of Motorsports series on VoiceAmericaSports.com.
Do it for this week. Time to get ready for another great week of racing to talk about next time on Pit Pass. Tune in next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, for another fast-paced 200-mile-per-hour edition of Pit Pass USA with Larry Henry on Power Up, your motorsports channel.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Sports Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericasports.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.